So I'm coming at this from a bit of a different perspective, and that is one of a practitioner who has undertaken a study to sort of strengthen organizational programming. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about what we've done at my organization. My name is Wyvon Hutchinson, and I'm the Senior Director of Law and Human Rights at La Isla Foundation, and some of the findings that came out of that study. So let's just dig right in. I don't have any financial relationships or interests to disclose. A little bit about my organization. The La Isla Foundation was founded in 2008 to address the epidemic of chronic kidney disease of unknown etiology that is affecting sugarcane workers in Nicaragua, but also on the Pacific coast of Central America in general. We aim to facilitate public health research to identify the cause of the epidemic, raise awareness, and create a broad base of support through media outreach, organize public health interventions to support the affected workers and reduce disease prevalence, and ensure corporate compliance with industry regulations and consistent government enforcement of applicable laws for worker protection. So I'm primarily concerned with that last one right there, and the work of my team primarily has to do with sort of assessing and strengthening the protections in place for these sugarcane workers. So the place that we're talking about is Chinandega. Chinandega is located about 130 kilometers outside of Managua. The average temperature there is 89 degrees Fahrenheit, but during the harvest season, it regularly climbs over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It's home to Ingenio San Antonio, the largest sugar producer in the country and also the largest employer in the region. Now, this is relevant because of the epidemic that we're seeing, CKDU, or MEN, Mesoamerican nephropathy. I prefer to use the term CKDU, but you'll hear both, particularly at this conference. CKDU is associated with strenuous labor and hot climates. It's a progressive degenerative condition characterized by gradual loss of kidney function, and because of limited treatment options, and higher likelihood of complications, it's often fatal in Nicaragua. Unlike the more familiar form of chronic kidney disease traditionally associated with obesity, hypertension, and diabetes, like I said, this is associated with strenuous labor and hot climates, and it particularly affects the sugarcane workers. In Nicaragua, it's recognized as an occupational illness. And it presents at a much younger age. In the communities where we work, men as young as 19 have been diagnosed, and we've seen men as young as 21 succumb to the disease. You can see that in Nicaragua, the mortality rate of CKDU, in Western Nicaragua, it's 5 times higher than the national average. And we think the mortality rate is actually much higher because of difficulties in record keeping, and reporting. So we think that actually, from what we've assessed, from 2002 to 2012, 46% of all male deaths and 75% of deaths of men from men aged 35 to 55 in Chichigalpa, where we worked, were caused by CKDU. So that's kind of an assessment we did through the death records, but that gives you a general idea of how prevalent the disease is. So we like to think of this as sort of, while we don't know the cause of it, we think that it's associated with heat stress, volume depletion, and acute kidney injury. Because the solution may be far off, we decided to take a rights-based intervention in reducing disease prevalence and mitigating its impact. What we've seen in the field is sort of a cycle of sickness and death. It starts with limited education, which contributes to an unskilled workforce and limited job opportunities in general. Because of the limited education, limited job opportunities, people accept low wages and are willing to work in the harsh conditions of the sugarcane plantations. Eventually, those harsh conditions contribute to a CKDU diagnosis. Once a worker's diagnosed, they're fired. And they don't stop working in the field at that point. They go over to subcontractors, usually under a false ID, and work with even less protection, so less access to healthcare, a less likelihood of receiving Social Security, which contributes to a rapid acceleration of the disease, early death, and then the children go into the field to replace the income of the primary income earner. And as you can see, it's cross-cutting. It cuts across issues of labor rights, social protection, governance, and corporate liability. And so for us, the whole situation, well, at least for me, was very complicated and difficult to untease. And so I just kind of, what we did, we took a step back and we decided to look at the question of legal compliance in general. Because the issues were so wide-ranging and we had just anecdotal evidence, we decided that we needed, prior to planning any kind of intervention, to systematically assess the right situation. It became pretty clear early on that arguing for increased labor rights was not going to be enough. So to effectively gauge the character and the breadth of the contributory rights violations affecting this particular group, we developed a legal framework that went beyond labor law and that was itself cross-cutting. My team combed through a large body of industrial standards, third-party certification regimes, local, regional, and international laws related to public health, civil rights, labor rights, international trade, occupational health and safety, and human rights, and anything else that we could find that related to the present issue. And from there, we distilled the key principles into a set of relevant guidelines against which we could measure compliance. Then we developed a questionnaire that could be used to collect quantitative and qualitative data from workers in the field on the nature and extent of rights violations that they faced. And in July, we piloted this questionnaire in Chichigalpa with 29 current and former workers at Ingenio San Antonio. So some caveats. This study was conducted on a small scale. Like I said before, there were only 29 workers. It's not a demographic representation of the Nicaraguan sugar industry as a whole. The findings are preliminary. We've just finished conducting a larger scale study, which does confirm a lot of them. But I think it's important that we view the findings that I'm about to present to you through that lens. Demographics. So, as I said before, we have 29 respondents. They all worked at Ingenio San Antonio, which is the largest sugarcane producer. It not only produces refined sugar, but also ethanol and molasses for rum. All of the respondents were male. The average age was 28, median age was 26. Average household size was six persons, and on average, each interviewee had one child or dependent. 41% worked as cane cutters. 73% were currently working or had at one time worked as subcontractors. And of the 29 workers we interviewed, four were diagnosed with CKDU and three reported high levels of creatinine, which could indicate CKDU. So we were actually surprised with the results. They were much worse than we expected. And we kind of, for the purposes of this presentation, I've kind of divided them up into, I think, important issues of compliance that contribute to disease onset and then exacerbate the disease and its impact within these communities. And I think the most important of these is the working conditions. Like we said, we think the disease is caused by chronic dehydration, which can make workers more vulnerable to certain exposures. And that directly ties into the working conditions. So 86% of the respondents describe their work as dangerous. The average working day was 12 hours. Previously, it had been estimated between 8 and 12 hours, and we found that it was actually more like 9 and 15. So the average day for these sugarcane workers was 12 hours. Respondents usually brought their own water to work in sort of these pitchers of water that were between 2.5 and 5 liters, and that was all the water they had for the day. So you can imagine if they're carrying this water with them as they're cutting sugarcane, they're not drinking as often as they should. Once the water's gone, there's nothing left for them to drink. And to compound that problem, 24% complained about the quality of water provided by the Ingenio. They believe it's contaminated because of where it's sourced and because of possible exposure to pesticides. So we're already dealing with, given the long working hours and the lack of water, conditions that are conducive towards chronic dehydration, and that's compounded by the fact workers only had occasional access to shade. So, like I said before, the average temperature is 100 degrees in the fields during harvest season, and workers don't have access to water or shade. And only 20% of all workers received an explanation of working safety conditions at work. And safety training and equipment were only provided for directly employed workers. Now, this is important because 85% of the workforce is subcontracted, which means that's only 15% of the workers in the field. And, well, not even in the field, in the entire Ingenio. 100% of the field workers are subcontractors. So I don't have a lot of time. I'm just going to skip to the key findings. We were surprised at the extent of child labor in the field. Nicaraguan law prohibits child labor in dangerous conditions for anyone under the age of 18. According to Nicaraguan law, these are dangerous conditions because the temperature can rise above 37 degrees Celsius, and there is extended exposure to ultraviolet rays. So as you'll see, several of the people we interviewed worked for ISA's children, and many of them knew children between the ages of 14 and 17 working in the fields. We are now currently conducting a child labor study to assess the extent of child labor across several Ingenios in Nicaragua. Access to health and social security. This is a big deal. One of the things that I wanted to point out is that 70% of directly employed employees and 68% of subcontracted workers don't have access to test results. Every harvest season, ISA, the Ingenio, conducts tests of creatinine levels to tell workers whether or not they're okay to work. These test results are also required to apply for Social Security in the event of disability because of chronic kidney disease. However, workers are not shown these test results, nor are they given a copy of these test results. They're not told what their levels are. They're only told if they're clear to work. So that's a huge problem in terms of empowering workers to advocate for their own health interests and making sure that they're actually educated on their own health status. None of the respondents that we talked to who had been diagnosed with CKDU received any form of Social Security or disability. 70% of respondents made salaries significantly below minimum wage, which is a quarter of the cost of living in Nicaragua, so you can just imagine the kind of poverty they're living in. In addition, we found evidence of coercive labor practices, including salary withholding without cause, salary being deducted as punishment, and regular underpayment. There's no unionization, really. Most of the unions that were in place, workers believe they were corrupted. They believe that if they started their own union, they would be blacklisted or fired, and several had cited instances with family members who had been fired for trying to unionize, and one worker was jailed for 3 days for advocating for his rights, he told us. No one belonged to a union, and one respondent didn't know what a union was. Intimidation and extrajudicial violence, this was another very surprising thing for us. There is a pervasive climate of fear in these sugarcane communities, which is one of the reasons why workers don't advocate in their own interests more, why they're afraid to participate in studies such as this one. And in addition to these stats you see in front of us, we were also told three stories of people who had been killed by companies' security forces for minor infractions, one of which we confirmed was a preteen boy, ages 11 to 13, who was killed by company security forces for scavenging for scrap metal and company property. So the company security kind of works as kind of an added intimidation layer in addition to kind of the corrupt local government and the prevalence of Ingenio management. In terms of legal enforcement and access to justice, 75% of respondents felt their rights were not protected. What's more important, though, is that 24% of respondents had tried to file a lawsuit or complaint against the Ingenio, and of those, zero received an answer. And then four respondents claimed they were prevented from bringing a claim to the company by the company or the government. So what we see here is not necessarily a cycle of sickness and death, but a web of sickness and death that is cross-cutting, and at the end of the day, the workers are caught in the middle. And I have a lot of recommendations. But I, you know, I don't want to go through them all right now. I'm short on time. But I think some for private industry, one of the big things is that the field workers need to go back to subcontract to being contracted. Subcontracted labor is subject to less oversight, and quite often the Ingenio subcontracts labor to kind of shield itself from liability. Things like access to drinking water and shade are very important, and we believe participation in a third-party certification regime would also provide an outside source of monitoring for those conditions. The government can enforce the existing laws on the books, enforce minimum wage laws, increase labor inspections, increase Social Security protection, and strengthen and enforce existing union requirements. And then these are my recommendations for international actors, which I will not go through now because of the time constraints. However, if you have any questions, please feel free to see me after the presentation. The report that contains these findings is available online, and you can reach me at this email address. So thank you very much.